Welcome to The Sounds of Sand, a podcast inquiring into the beauty and mystery of existence beyond ultimate truths. Welcome back to The Sounds of Sand podcast. This is Michael Riley. Before we begin today's episode, I just wanted to take a moment to say that if you'd like to support this podcast and the mission of Science and Non-Duality, please consider becoming a SAND member. In addition to supporting this podcast and the production of films like The Wisdom of Trauma and our monthly community gatherings, you'll gain access to our SAND member library with hundreds of videos from SAND's 15-year history of conferences, webinars, and courses. You can visit scienceandnonduality.com/join or find a link in the show notes. Today, I'm in conversation with Reem Dreemy Abdu. Dreemy is a native Egyptian international interdisciplinary sound artist, embodiment and meditation guide, curator, cultural worker, and community building founder of the Inclusive Global Impact Agency for Women and BIPOC holistic artists called the Collective Bay. And today we'll hear some excerpts from songs from Dreemy throughout today's episode with a full-length track at the end of the episode, so stick around for that. All today on the Sounds of Sand podcast presented by Science and Non-Duality. So I'm here with Reem Dreemy Abdu for the Sounds of Sand podcast. Thanks for being with us here today, Dreemy.
Thank you for having me. I'm so honored to be here with you.
So as a way to orient the listeners and to welcome them into your world, would you mind describing the journey by which you became known as Dreemy?
It is a long journey. It is an embodiment that I've come into over my lifetime. And the last 10 years in particular, seven really specifically, it's been a coming of age into this expression that is devoted to pulling down dreams from the ethers and expressing them and activating them in others around me.
Cool. And is dream work a part of your creative process? Like, do you get inspiration from your own personal dreams?
This is where my name really comes from. I believe deeply in the ancestral wisdom that our dreams carry information that doesn't live in the seen realms. And so dream work more and more, and the older I get, the wiser I become, the more of a source and a wellspring of truth it is for me.
Nice. And mentioning the ancestors, in your bio, it mentions your indigenous Egyptian. And I know dream work is a big part of ancient Egypt and that lineage. So how does that present in your work, that connection to your ancestral Egyptian lineage?
Mm-hmm. More and more, my work is an uncovering and a remembering of everything lost in the sands of time, I'll say. And it's perfect for sand, you know? Yeah. It is an act of recall and recovering and a process of unlearning everything that I was maybe taught or have seen about my own lineage or heritage in the outside world. So the dream work helps me really authentically and honestly come back to a place in which my ancestors were in their fullest expression. And to not have that be encoded or programmed by any of the histories of colonial time.
Yeah, I was actually doing another podcast where I was a guest earlier today, and we were talking about dreams, which is, I would say it's ironic, but it's not, you know, it's just, this is the way dream work manifests itself, that synchronicities occur in our waking lives and we can recognize them. But one thing we were talking about is collective dreaming, because in the West, this colonial narrative is the dreams are very personal, and, you know, your dreams, and you're supposed to decode your dreams with some sort of Freudian or Jungian analysis and solve some problem, you know, but so many indigenous cultures practice dream as a community, but, you know, as just another way to connect with one another.
Right. Right. Yeah. It's a collective remembrance. It's a collective travel. It's a collective storytelling. It's a myth making. It's a world building. And I think there is some sacred balance between the collective dream and also the very vital individual work that we do. I think that that is also the gift and the medicine of the West, having grown up in the West, is the true ability to step into your own unique also expression, your individual as well. The problem or the trauma or the toxicity is the extreme in either direction. So I think my lifetime, this body is meant to be this, you know, rebalancing act of the devotion to the collective, the ancestral wisdom, the commitment to community and the community dream, and also like the vitality and importance of me coming in my singular strength to that work, in my singular vision and my unique perspective to that work. And all of us are being asked for that sacred balance too.
Mm. Yeah, I love it. It's another one of these cracking open of the paradox, you know, the individual and the collective being vibrant and sharing together, you know, not being one or the other. And again, this binary thinking is just another symptom of our toxicity of this sort of culture we're steeped in, that it's got to be this way or this way, you know, it's both and.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. And mentioning community, could you describe for the listeners some of the communities you're connected with, like the Collective Bay Project and the different, all the different beautiful things you're weaving on your website and in person?
Mm. The web is really strong.
Yeah.
And you spoke about synchronicity. There's no, everything is interconnected. All the communities I'm a part of, whether they know each other or not, are holding some strand or thread of the collective tapestry. My work is rooted in my devotion, and my leadership is rooted in the Collective Bay, which I founded in 2016 when I first really stepped into my artwork. And it is I like to call it an ecology. I've really, in the last several years, understood it as an ecology of care. So it is a collective of care practitioners, conscious artists, healing artists, conscious facilitators, embodiment practitioners, energy workers, sonic alchemists, we call them, folks who are pulling down these wisdoms from the ethers, from their ancestries, from their lineages, and pulling up the wisdoms from the planet to create spaces for healing, for transmutation, for transformation, and to do it in a way that can really meet the moment, to be just as involved with the political, the social, the economic, as we are with the ethereal and the mystical.
Yeah. Again, that's another one of these dichotomies that I think doesn't exist, the ethereal and the mystical and the spiritual and the political.
Right. Right. It's a mirror of my journey. You know, before I was making music, I was studying and training to be a lawyer, a human rights lawyer for a long time. I worked in journalism for quite a bit, in podcasting. I was devoted to truth making and to understanding myself in the context of lies that have been told. Right? Lies that are programmed around who we are and what we're capable of and what we're allowed to do and how we got here. And so when I had my own awakening, music, meditation, movement, these technologies helped me integrate, apply, embody everything that I was understanding in the mind, theories about who I am as a human and sociologies about how we understand each other and relate to each other, the mystical and the transcendent that sound is, that mystical and transcendent quality of sound helps us have a felt sense of who we are and what we're doing here. It's not theory anymore. It's not a written text. It's not an academic or, scientific conception. It's a felt conception. It's a emoted expression. It's real. You can touch and taste and smell it. And so that shift from being in an institutional, academic, intellectual reality that is politics and economics, right? We think about people's trauma. We make policies about people's trauma, into an embodiment of what it would be to touch and tend that trauma. For me, was that great, like, coming together of these seeming binaries, right? These like perceived dichotomies about how we can show up and be in the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. I've, you know, practicing, let's say, sacred sound practice and music my whole life too, I can attest to that. It's like there's something undeniable when these shifts happen. Like if you're, you know, in some sort of sound ceremony or dance or whatever it is, really, but it's like when it's fully embodied and you really lose control of the, you know, you let go of the theory and the concepts, the transformation is quite undeniable. And you're just like,
yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Cool. And I wanted to get into some of the specifics of like the Collective Bay and what you offer. And looking at your website, one thing that really called to me was base yoga. Yeah. And I'd love to hear more about that.
Yeah, that's a beautiful project that I birthed. Base yoga, I birthed with a dear Bay sister named Nikki Ortiz, who is an incredible Ecuadorian movement artist and yoga master. She's, if you believe it, a world yoga champion. And just an incredible architect of the physical body. She understands how to move her body in shapes that can liberate the consciousness. And we both also are like major sound nerds and coalesced specifically around bass music and sub-frequency sound. And so I will compose and produce frequency-oriented sound, work with sub-frequencies that are connected to brainwave shifts in the brain, the mind, the body. And she will architect a flow. And the power of that fusion of an intentional frequency-oriented soundscape plus really intelligent movement, intentional sequence design that is designed to awaken the spine, liberate the consciousness, clear up us as the channel between the earth and the cosmos, has been for me like revolutionary. It's been so powerful. It's really, base yoga for me is what is possible when we really harness sound for our healing. And not just sound, but married with movement. So it's like the ultimate fusion of music and movement for me.
Mm-hmm. And is this related to binaural beats when you talk about the different brainwave frequencies?
For sure. So binaural beats, you'll only really hear if you had headphones on because they're binaural, right? They're both sides of the brain, bi and neural. So it's that's binaural is a very specific experience that we'll have when we get to do the movement in headphones. But because you want to be free and spacious in your movement, we've often just broadcast the sound. And then my job is to make sure the sound is really attuned in its frequency. And then we're also playing with other kind of like binaural technologies like entrainment. So working with rhythm and tempo, the space between beats to create a kind of like ritual initiation for the brain and the body so that the body finds these trance states. It's different than a kind of like ecstatic dance trance state because the technology of the yoga, the alignment of the yoga postures, the linearity, right? And the architecture of the yoga postures allows the trance states to be channeled. So for every, you know, ancient posture, let's say it's like a warrior and the sound, the frequency can travel through the body, which is a channel that frequency of the warrior, that code of the warrior, doesn't just become embodied, it becomes radiated. So we become these amplifiers for whatever energy intention we're radiating out. And we're doing this all the time anyway. That's the nature of this being human. But the power of fusing these ancestral technologies, sound, yoga, movement, the postures, the asana, the potential for imprinting and encoding and creating a reality just expands infinitely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sounds like a really beautiful marriage of science and spirituality here, mm-hmm. you know, because, in the binaural beats, you know, I think some people may have used them, you know, like you said, you have to kind of use them on headphones for them to truly work. But that sound, you know, it's kind of hard to describe, but there's a certain sound that binaural beats make. It's like a, it's like this pulsating back and forth sound. And when we hear that on speakers, I feel like it awakens something in our body if we've done binaural beats before. I was at a sound healing event last weekend, and it was three women, and they were using quartz crystal bowls. And I think they had these two big bowls, and I think they were slightly out of tune with each other, like maybe 8 hertz or so is my guess. And when they were bowed at the same time, it was making that binaural beat frequency sound, let's say, even though I wasn't listening on headphones. And it had the same effect in my neurochemistry to get into that state, whether it was the theta state or delta state of relaxation.
Mm-hmm. It's all this technology of balancing the body and balancing the being. So whether it's right, left hemisphere, or like we were talking about, these polarities, right, between the collective and the individual, or if it's masculine, feminine, whatever it is, we create this kind of almost like tension, like you were saying, but also a play, a relationship between the duality, so that we can find center more effortlessly.
Yeah. Yeah, you were talking about that earlier, the idea of it, so much of the problems we face as a society are going to one extreme or the other. But really, all of these dualities are made to be experienced and played with left and right, whether it's, like you said, masculine, feminine, or just different gradients of experience. And that's right. The human experience is to experience those gradients.
That's right. I think that for me, more and more, it becomes more vital because we see what extremes has done. And it allows us to also kind of return to a birthright when we were just gradient, right? Like when we were just light or water or sound before we found our way in these like physical incarnations in these bodies, this compression of the spirit in form. And sound is one of those technologies where we can become infinite again, where we can sense the full spectrum of existence. And that full spectrum starts with just like the full spectrum of my emotion, the full spectrum of my felt body, the things I can feel, from, you know, anger to sheer pleasure to joy. And to be an explorer, but also like a dancer, a swimmer, a bird traveling through these gradients, I feel like is really the work, is to become more agile in our movement through.
Yeah, that's so beautiful. It reminds me that connection through sound goes all the way back to, you know, the Big Bang or whatever our creation myth is. And so many creation myths are rooted in sound, you know, and it's really connecting us to the divine, to the primordial, to the, like you said, the us that was around before we incarnated into these, you know, relational bodies.
Yes. And even, you know, it does not need be so mystical. Like the creation myth is also a creation truth. Like the first sound we heard was our mother's heartbeat, our mother's womb. So, you know, I can, my myth is no longer a myth. It's a truth about my existence and my birth, is that sound was the first encounter with being. Whether you are spiritual or not, now when we get to dive into the spirituality, the infinity of the sound that birthed us into the being shows itself.
Yeah. And sound is, for most of us, the last sound we'll hear. It's the last sense to go as we're dying.
Right.
And, you know, the Tibetans chant the Tibetan Book of the Dead for 49 days because they believe our spirit is still listening and hearing as it goes through the bardos. You know?
Right, right, right.
Ancestor by Dreamy from the Goldwaters EP. Well, I'm just curious, in this collective, do you all give each other, let's say, yeah, like what's the kind of dynamic within the group? Like, do you give each other sessions? And mm-hmm. like, I imagine that would be the case, right?
Mm-hmm. So since inception, Bay has been an amorphous ecology. Less an ecosystem, more an ecology. So built on relationships, knowing one another, being familiar with one another, experiencing one another. And then my work was to bring us together. That was the vision and the calling that I had, because I never really experienced community as a artist, as a healing artist, as a conscious artist in New York City. That's changed quite a bit now in the last 7 years since Bay was born. But the first intention and the first work was just to have a collective space to be with one another and to be able to share the offerings, the gifts to a wider community. And since, you know, I would say since 2020, these ruptures in the collective consciousness, right? The pandemic, now the awareness of multiple genocides, just the crises of our time, the environment degradation, the environmental degradation, the importance of organization and giving structure, this sacred masculine to this sacred feminine space, which is concerned with the healing of community. And so we've now kind of like rooted some roots. We've grounded some roots where there is leadership structure and we're cultivating now more a network of teachers who have really been devoted in their practice over many, 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 many years, and building an ecosystem. So it's transformed from ecology to ecosystem now, where those teachers can share what they've learned, and there can be a skill share, and there can be an impartation of knowledge and wisdom learned. And even saying this out loud, it makes me think, you know, we're all in training to become future ancestors. And I know some mm-hmm. folks have heard this before, but it always bears repeating and reminding that we're all in training to become future ancestors and elders, wisdom keepers, whether we come directly from, you know, preserved indigenous traditions or not. So that responsibility becomes awakened, and then our collective spaces require responsible structuring, healthy relationship with leadership, and modeling what that looks like, a reality in which healers are leaders again. And that leadership does not mean some, you know, freak usurpation of power or expression of power, but that it actually is a ancient but future conception of how we can be organized in a society, what that looks like in a circular nature, which is an ecological nature, mm-hmm. where everything feeds everything else, instead of what we're familiar with, which is the top down. I look up and I stay here. And that kind of like revolutionary systems building, I'm so inspired by folks who are really doing that work in a more political space, in a more economic space. I'm thinking about solidarity economics, circular economics. I'm thinking about emergent strategy, biomimicry, and being able to apply that and embody that and generate new systems around that in a mystical space, a spiritual space, a healing space.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's so beautiful. It reminds me almost of traditional, like the sort of Western medicine model that you would go to, let's say a clinic, and they would have a team of doctors who could help you. And it would be like, you know, here's your throat and nose doctor. And, oh, if it's mm-hmm. involving your lungs, we'll send you over here. And it's like, you know, obviously there's a lot of problems with that model of the Western medicine treating everything as isolated. But mm-hmm. this, you know, ecology of artists supporting one another and healers yeah. supporting one another, and being able mm-hmm. to sort of refer someone to someone else and kind of sense, okay, this person maybe needs a sound healer. This person needs some energy work. This person needs some touch, you know. I think that's the future of collective healing and community.
Yes, yes, yes. And it's how to do that in a way that doesn't, how to do that in a way that's really functional, like that can really meet the time. And I mean that when I think about like, what are the economics of it? You know, how is it sustainable? How is it regenerative? Because I think a lot of spirituality or consciousness work wants to skip many steps. We want to skip to the step where money is not a factor again, right? But we have to be in relationship with reciprocity. We have to rewire and redefine how we understand exchange. And we have to create new sustainable economies that are going to last for several generations as we make the transition out of, you know, a colonial capitalist model. But still understanding we are still participating in capitalist models for now. And so how can we negotiate that? And how do we create a transition that is really accessible for people to participate?
Yeah. And I think that's a lot of this like cryptocurrency thing that was happening in the last few years. I think some of the more altruistic versions of that was seeking something like that. Like, okay, yeah. Fiat capitalism isn't working. How do we find an alternative way? Unfortunately, mm-hmm. it just got co-opted by the same people that created the problem in the first place.
And right.
it turned into just like another stock market, you know, nonsense, fake thing to make quick money.
Right.
So no, these are really, really important questions for communities and yeah, like you said, the transition not to be overly optimistic and naive and just be like, oh, we'll just barter everything, you know? And it's like, yeah, but my cell phone company still wants cash. You know, they don't want to barter with me to give me cell phone coverage, you know?
Right. Right. It's the sacred balance again. And it's yeah. to be so lucid in our healing, in our revolution, that we are in real and honest relationship with what needs to be done, you know, the work that will be involved, and to be really, yeah, lucidity for me is a very important just way of moving through this work and way to integrate and balance my spirituality with my being human in this society, right? To be really upfront and real with what needs to be done, the work that needs to be done, to not mince, you know, or to not lie to myself or others, and that responsibility of being in real honesty about what it's going to take to get to the worlds that we want to see.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. It's just like you said, the polycrisis that are happening now and the genocides and, you know, Gaza and Congo and all these places. It's, yeah, there's no time for sort of nice language and pretending everything's okay and just meditating in your small group and being like, oh, the world is all light and consciousness. Like those days are over, you know, and it was kind of a fantasy to begin with, but, to pretend that that's the world is a fantasy. And yeah. So in your group, you mentioned this earlier, you know, there's this merging of the divine and the infinite with the, you know, the political activism and need for conscious change in the world. Could you speak a little bit more about that and maybe some of the examples of that in your collective?
The Collective Bay, because it's such a spacious, amorphous, wide tapestry of creators and healers and facilitators, holds space for a full range of devotional offerings. And because of that, touches so many parts of the body of crisis that we are holding. So that is to say, we have bays, healers, activists who are working in the space of water, artists who are building sculptures that double as coral reefs in degrading shorelines. We have artists who are teaching mentors for survivors of human trafficking. So creating spaces, sharing skills, art practices that can re-empower and return youth to their sovereignty and their agency. Many and most of our facilitators are working in women's issues. So restoring feminine sovereignty, feminine health, feminine safety, feminine power. And so much of our work as I've grown also and returned to my own indigeneity and indigenization of my work surrounds and returns to indigenous sovereignty. So food justice, food access, land rematriation, land stewardship. So the work has been to allow these more ethereal, spiritual, mystical modalities, like, you know, a sound healing practice or a somatic movement practice or a painting or a poem, to be real tools and technologies for tending these crises, to be real modalities for meeting and transforming the state of being for under-resourced, underprivileged, and suffering populations. And the work is so big, right? Like, I don't pretend like we're doing everything or can do everything. But this link between activating healers and conscious artists towards their impact, orienting healers and healing artists towards their healing impact in a tangible way, for me, has also really grounded and rooted my practice. It's really helped me ask, who do I make my art for? What's it for? And it's helped me build community around other folks who are asking those same questions. Because the mainstream music, art, creative industry is not really asking those questions. It hasn't been. And doesn't create space or economy for that, because it doesn't feed the bottom line. So it's been about creating a different kind of bottom line, right? A different kind of orientation entirely, where the service is embedded in the creation.
Wow. Yeah, that's so important, you know, that who is the art for? Who is the healing or who really needs it? You know, a lot of people who go to these, whether it's, you know, yoga classes or whatever, it's like, I'm not saying they don't need it, but it's like, we all know that there's communities that need this so much more, who are complete, you know, that are just living such painful and traumatic lives. And I think this is a shift. What you're talking about is a shift that really happened somehow in 2020. You know, it was COVID. It was the George Floyd reckoning. It was the end of the, you know, the Trump era, or maybe end of part one. We'll see about that. But something about the collective consciousness in the art world, I noticed, like, I don't mean this as a negative term, but I felt like there was not much distinction between art and entertainment in the art world. It was like, we're just going to do stuff that, you know, we know the audience will like. And I'm talking about like artist audience. Like, I would go to art openings or quote unquote experimental music things, and we all knew what we were going to get, you know, and it was basically entertainment. So this shift that you're talking about is, it was only 4 years ago, so it's still kind of in the beginning phases of it. But I do think we're going to see 2020 as like a real shift in this idea of creating art and healing, of art and healing coming together in really profound ways. Yeah.
Yes, it's been happening. And, you know, I think of my own evolution as an artist, and, you know, the great and deep and really frustrated and angry resistance I had towards both art spaces that were vapid, shallow, happening on the surface of entertainment, right? Just entertainment. And also spiritual spaces that were happening in silos and weren't actually accessible to the people. I'm talking about the larger populace of people, like humanity. And both are extremes. And so I've been leaning into, okay, if we are participating in the entertainment, if I am participating in the entertainment world as an artist, what is my responsibility then? Because like you said, some folks get it all, right? Like, the privilege is endless. And maybe they don't need it, right? Maybe it seems like they don't need it. But I've also leaned into, like, if I'm in these spaces, then what do these folks need? Mm-hmm. Because if a certain group of people are holding privilege, and with that privilege, the ability, the technology, the tools, the agency to impact change. And I'm talking about really material resources of privilege, right? Mm-hmm. Money, power, technology. Then the spaces I create for them become that much more also impactful, right? Mm-hmm. Then the spaces I create in those worlds can shift the dial, can shift the needle, like really can. But it boils down to my intentionality, right? As that artist, it boils down to what I'm doing with that time and space, how I'm exercising my own privilege and my own presence in those worlds of privilege. So I don't take them lightly. And I think for every artist who is in, you know, an industry or in a world where it seems disconnected from communities on the ground, right? I say like communities with their hands in the soil. Then what are you being asked to do? How are you being asked to wake up those folks with privilege? How are you being asked to activate and orient them towards action as well? And so we need everybody. We need everybody. Everybody needs the healing. We just get to change what that healing is oriented for now. We get to change how that healing is in service. I've been having these incredible conversations in this moment, you know, with what's happening, with the heartbreak that's happening in Gaza, in Congo, in Ethiopia, around the planet, and especially in spiritual communities for folks who are tired. We're tired of spirituality and consciousness happening in these vacuums and silos, like you're saying, these fantasy worlds of I'm doing the work for myself, I'm healing for me. And we're bursting open that paradigm and we're seeing, again, who is this for? And if you're going to receive it, how will you channel it then? How will you pass it on? How will you be an amplifier for what you've received? So that I feel is my work, even in these spaces that don't seem to be in service, is how I can burst open the possibility for impact. It's subtle and it's like, you know, it's like it's unexpected and it's quiet, but it's impactful in its vibration. And I'm also interested in that. There are big, bold acts of transformation and change and service and impact. And there's also the subtle. And so it's the gradient we were talking about. It's how do we work across the full spectrum of our agency.
No, that's very wise. It's very good. Yeah, because there is a tendency to kind of shut people right. out and be like, no, you rich, white, privileged people, you've had enough. You know, you've had enough healing. Let's get somebody else in here. But like you said, it needs to be everybody. And it's, you know, it's not up to us all the time right. to assume we understand the way energy is right. going to ripple through, you know. And, you know, that there could be someone in this group who receives something, you know, is at one of your events, and they're actually have, you know, the ear of the president or, you know, someone at the UN, and they tell somebody, and it's like, right. you never know if you, mm-hmm. if you unfreeze the right heart, what that impact can be, just because of the way it goes.
It is to make gold out of everything that you touch. Thank you.
listening to Alquimia, The Alchemist, another track by Dreamy from the Gold Waters EP. Cool. The only thing I wanted to ask a little bit more about, if you still have time, is the connection to Egypt. And I wanted to ask, have you traveled back to Egypt, to the ancestral lands that you're from?
Of course. All of my family is still in the motherland in Egypt. My parents are both immigrants to the United States. They came to New York in the 80s. But all of our family is still there. And the line is long. My return over the years, you know, and I regularly return, is each time is a remembrance and a recall. It's a reconnection. It's a healing itself from the wound of separation. And it's also, you know, we're talking about this sacred balance of the mystical, the spiritual, the ethereal, the transcendent, which I think Egypt really, you know, ancient Egypt, Kemet, really evokes, right? This is the birthplace of that. But also when you go to Egypt, and anyone who's gone to Egypt will tell you that it is a very real country, land, place with unique history, politics, economics, and sociocultural realities. And for me, it's so vital holding them both at once, to not neglect who Egypt is today for who she was thousands of years ago. That for me is so vital. And I think more and more I become more emboldened and empowered to really say that, because we get that singular image of Egypt, that it is, you know, this magical, mystical place. Yes, it is. And it's also a land and a people that have suffered for centuries because of the extraction of that magic and that mysticism, the colonization of that magic and mysticism, which is still happening today. And I think that's so vital, especially in the world of consciousness and spirituality that we love to skip timelines, we love to quantum leap, we love to travel dimensions. But like we were saying, the integrity of the slowness and the lucidity of the timelines that are happening, and to be able to go back, to return to an ancient time with integrity, to not skip what's happened in the in-between. And to understand that what's happened in the in-between from that ancient majesty until now, all of that is vital information too. Even now, and even more so, to understand and to see how that fall from the majesty could happen, how that degradation of the high consciousness could happen, because it is a mirror for us. It is a mirror and a reminder to not repeat those same mistakes. Egypt, ancient Egypt, was a pinnacle for the highest of consciousness, the greatest of mystery, the depth of creation itself. But it was also a perfect example of what happens when we devote ourselves to empire. What happens when the greed overrides our devotion? So I'm conscious of both. And I think being Egyptian uniquely, I want to hold both in honesty. And I want to invite anyone who is working or called to ancient Egypt to be present with Egypt today, because they are the same land. And to extract one from the other is to repeat the colonization.
Hmm. Yeah, that's quite profound. Not something I've really thought about so much, because I think I felt, you know, victim to the sort of, I've never been to Egypt, but my connection, I was going to ask about this, is, you know, Afrofuturism and mm-hmm. Sun Ra and the sort of fetishization, let's say, of the mystical aspects of Egypt without really, like you said, being present for the entire history. And it's one of the most ancient civilizations on the planet. And like you said, we can see these arcs of empire, you know, coming through the Middle Ages and then into modern Egypt. And the we can kind of, I think we could learn a lot by kind of studying the deep history mm-hmm. and the current history of what's unfolding in Egypt. Mm-hmm.
It represents this possibility for practicing radical imagining, right? It's to like replace ourselves in a time when we were totally embedded and connected and integrated with spirit, where we were one in the same and everything was truly a ritual and a ceremony, truly, truly, truly. And everyone in the society was involved and embedded in ritual. So we replace ourselves and that empowers us and reminds us and helps us remember what we've forgotten. But it's also so important, that lucidity of not just remembering and returning, but also seeing who we are now, honoring and acknowledging what we've been programmed with now. So I've been really in this process of, yes, the radical imagining, but also like the radical truth, and to bridge those two, to bridge the space between here and then, so that we are fully here. We never leave here. And that's the great like gift of consciousness, right? It's like this deep presence, this honest, clean, clear presence here and now. And at the same time, widening our capacity to be everywhere all at once, to be back then, to remember who we were then also, but to not lose one for the other, again, to dissolve the extremes and to be in this, like our elders on this land, like the indigenous peoples of this Turtle Island, the beauty way, the middle way, and like the Buddhists before us, the middle path. So that integration, and with that requires a deep integrity, so we don't also hang out in this amorphous, you know, in between where nothing, where, you know, everything is nothing. But it is the sacred balance, and there is a skill and attunement. And I don't want to say a mastery, but really kind of like a mastery of that balance. And maybe I'll say mastery because it's a chance to rewire and reprogram and decode that word.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah. Yeah, I know what you mean when you use that word mastery. It's like an embodied knowing where you don't need to think about it anymore. It just becomes second nature for you to intuit these things, you know.
That's right. That's right. Embodied knowing is it.
Yeah. And let's talk about some stuff that you have coming up that's in this in this sphere, this beautiful ecology and ecosystem you're talking about.
There is so much happening. I mean, just a deep, enormous gratitude for the season and all that it's bursting and blooming through the soil. We just launched with the Collective Bay Remembership. So it is a transmutational membership model of training and initiating a new generation of healing artists who are also impact creators, and we'll offer a training into that initiation that can share some of the incredible tools and technologies and systems and medicines and lessons and wisdoms that have been really accumulated over almost a decade now with the collective. And that training will then help steward these healing artists and these consciousness facilitators into impact work. So linking them with our impact partners who are working with water, with women and with youth, with the environment, with the land, and creating more of a pipeline, but through a mentorship model and allowing people to really kind of rise in their service and really kind of raising the bar and the standard on healing facilitation and consciousness workers so that everybody is trauma informed, right? They know how to negotiate and hold space for the trauma that we've all now encountered. I would say since 2020, we've all touched some sense of trauma. If we were privileged or sheltered up until that point, that's when the rupture broke that. And being able to really be integrated and initiated in guiding folks through the grief of this moment so that they can be activated in their impact and in their power and in their agency. So I'm so very excited and grateful about Remembership. It feels like the culmination of many, many, many years of learning the hard way and not having a community or a space to be guided, to be supported, to be stewarded, and to be connected, connected to the people, the places, the spaces that I'm here to be in service to. So streamlining that process for folks who are called to the healing arts and to consciousness facilitation and to conscious community, and to help people build their own conscious communities in their own cities, in their own, on their own lands, and to really empower them with tools and technologies that took me very, very long to learn. So very, very grateful for that, to bring Remembership into the world. And besides that, tending my own flame, right? The balance, the sacred balance of the collective and the individual. And creating sound, channeling sound, working on the second EP in a three-part project called Mother and Water, which is my own unearthing and remembering of ancestry and heritage and the language of the earth. And my own offering to a lot of the environmental grief that we're feeling and fear and anxiety, using sound to kind of process, transmute, and to create space for to create space for return. I say return because it will mean that each one of us can really return and remember to what we're here to do. And I know sound is just that direct amplifier towards that. And so the music is a multi-genre expression. It's, you know, a beat dance floor house music, and it's down-tempo, rhythmic, you know, binaural entrainment, and it's ambient composition with, you know, sub-frequency sound healing, and it's spoken word, and it's song, and it's field recording, and it's the transmissions of the wisdom keepers in my life, my own mother, who's an incredible singer and vocalist, and some other musicians from around the world who are carrying the flame of their heritage through sound. So that's the Mother and Water project. And I'm overjoyed at like how long it's taking, you know, like this slow process of creation. But still, like in these moments, the power of sharing it helps usher the birth along. It helps like steward and midwife the offering, so I can bring it to you.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's good to take time, I think, you know, with the sort of zeitgeist is like, quick, you know, get the music out as quick as possible. But it's beautiful to take time, you know, to let it unfold in its own time. It's very motherly, you know, to respect the seasons of creation.
Yes.
Nice. Cool. We'll have links to all these, to the Remembership project and your upcoming EP. Beautiful. Well, thank you so much, Dreamy. This has been a really profound and resonant conversation for me, and I think for the Sand community. It's touching into so many things that are important to us these days. So we're so happy to have connected with you, and we'll continue the connection and the conversation in the future.
Thank you, Michael. I feel so grateful to get to share, and I pray that this conversation and all the conversations we have turn and alchemize into our action. Mm. That we remember we are the amplifiers of the reality, that we remember we are the channels of the sound. And so may we receive and give with a fluidity, the embodied knowing, the truth. Thank you.
And thank you all for listening to the Sounds of Sand podcast. We'll end today with a full track from Dreamy's Goldwater EP. This is Alamar, the Moon Dancer.
Black Ocean. Just like suns and like moons.
Moons like gold mines.
And gold shoes.
Black gold. Just like
black gold. Suns and light goshens.
Just like
gold.
Thank you for listening to The Sounds of Sand. We invite you to explore more of our talks, dialogues, videos, articles, events, and offerings through our website, scienceandnonduality.com. If you've enjoyed this conversation, please consider becoming a member to access our massive library of SAN content, available exclusively to SAN members. And we would love it if you could leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Google, and Spotify, and share this episode with your family, friends, and all sentient beings. Be well.